Hello everyone, welcome to Charm Buddhism Podcast. Here is where you can find guided meditations and talks on charm practice to benefit your life. So what is charm? Charm, spelled as C-H-A-N, is one of the most influential Chinese schools of Mahayana Buddhism. It is also the precursor to Japanese Zen. We encourage you to explore your local charm meditation communities. If you would like, feel free to contact us by visiting londoncharmmeditation.org if you are in Europe, tallahasseecharm.org if you are in America, or dhammacharm.org if you are in Asia.
Good evening. Can you all hear me well? Okay. So how's everyone doing tonight? Okay. Finally, the summer has arrived. we have a few very, very summery days. A heat wave's coming. Probably will stay for a couple more days. Okay, so tonight my topic is precepts, essential to our practice. So how many of you have taken precepts? 5 precepts? Raise hands if you have taken it. Some of them could not see you. You probably have your video. Okay. How many have you taken the 5 precept? Please raise your hands. Okay. Okay. Somebody show me thumbs up. Okay. I like that too. Anybody have taken the Bodhisattva precepts? Oh, Michael. Okay. Okay. Oh, Louis. Good. All right, I wonder, some of you may be thinking, precepts, that sounds like Buddhist law and order. Something regulates us that we have to follow. We're confined by these principles, that's these regulations. It may sound like that. You know, it's all about not doing this, you cannot do that, you cannot do this and that. It may appear to be like that. But actually, precept is helping us to develop good habits, wholesome habits, of not causing harm to others or to ourselves. And furthermore, to do good things, good deeds, wholesome deeds to ourselves and others. Develop that good habit. Now we have talked about karma, the habitual energy forces, so strong. That was caused by a habit we have developed lifetime after lifetimes. It's very hard to change that and change the course of our actions because that has already become a habit. When something becomes a habit, you just react in that way. You didn't go through your thinking process. Oh, this is the, let me think whether I should be doing this or not doing that. When you put down your toothpaste, you don't think, oh, should I put it this way, that way, this spot or that spot? You just put it there. You just leave your toothbrush like that. You just throw your dishes into the sink like that. that doesn't even go through your thinking process. So the precepts is a way to help us to develop good habits. Those good habits not causing any harm to ourselves and to others. And furthermore, good habits, wholesome habits that leads to wholesome action. And precept is a practice to cultivate loving, caring heart and compassionate mind. That's a very, very important practice that helps cultivate a compassionate mind, caring and loving heart. Okay, so today I would like to introduce you the precepts in four parts. First, I'd like to talk where those precepts came about. How was it created in the first place originally? Then, what's the Chan perspective toward the practice of precepts? What's the Chan approach? Is it different or same as other school or tradition in Buddhism? Third, how the precepts affects or related to our practice overall in general. Fourth, how do we integrate the practice of precept into our meditation practice, into our daily life, in all activities, all actions we make? And what kind of attitude should we have when we practice the precepts? Okay, let's talk about the origin of precepts. How the Buddha created precepts? How the precept came about? It was quite interestingly, you know, after the Buddha's attained enlightenment, and then started to give teachings. Within the 12 years since he started teaching, he has never set up any precepts at all. In other words, the first 12 years of him being a teacher, leading a sangha, you know, with so many students following him, practice with him, there was no precept at all. But they do have a guideline to follow, which is not doing evil, doing all kinds of goodness, purify one's own mind. And this is the Buddha's teaching. Very, very simple. They just follow this guideline. Not to commit evil and just do all kinds of good things. You know, the purpose is purify one's mind. That's all the teachings of the Buddhas. So all the students just follow that. So there was actually no need to set up a precept. Not until 12 years later. And this is actually recorded in the Mahaprajnaparamita Sastra, which is a commentary on the Mahaprajnaparamita Sutra. This is attributed by Nagarjuna. And recorded that in the Mahaprajnaparamita Sastra. At that time, during Buddha time, Buddha was in the city of Vaisali, There's this young monk. His name is Sudina. And he was the son of an elderly man, Kalandaka. That's his last name. And he was a monk, a disciple of the Buddha. And then he should be, behave just like a monk. However, and somehow he returned to his lay home. He had a sexual intercourse with his former wife. And that violated living a pure celibate life, as monastics should be obliged to. So the Shakyamuni Buddha then set up and this route. So the monastics should be refraining themselves from any sexual conduct. So in case anybody violate these precepts, it will be considered a defeat for a monastic. That's a very, very serious a very, very serious violation of the precepts. So that was the origin of the precepts. In other words, the Buddha did not set up the precepts or establish the precept because he thinks, oh, this is right, there's something people will do wrong, this is how I should train my students and this and that, set up all these rules. He didn't do that. And actually, at the very beginning, the first 12 years, there's no precepts at all because his students was able to just live a very purified lifestyle, not doing anything wrong and harmful, not causing any harm. Not until someone engaged, commit a misconduct and do a wrongful, evil things, then a precept is established. The precept is established when misconduct is committed to prevent other people who do the same thing, who commit the same evil things and cause harm to others, poor people. So this guideline is set up. That's the very origin of the precepts. And then later on, more violation by, wrongdoing, then he set up another room. So in that sense, okay, who should be observing the precepts? Well, starting from Buddha himself, he definitely observed the precepts, follow the precepts, honor the precepts, living by the precepts. So his disciples, and now 2,500, 600 years later, the Buddhist practitioners. As I've said, the precepts help us to live a life, to be freed, less likely to cause any harms and evil things to others, to ourselves. Mainly the five precepts, which we'll talk about, I'll get to that later. So even Buddha himself also lived by the precepts. All these great master bodhisattvas, a great chan master, greaters, they all live by the precepts. It's the most natural things. You don't cause any harm to others. This is very basic, right? So if someone claims he or she should not be bound by precepts. He can do whatever he wants, even violating the precepts. That's absolutely wrong and absurd. Never in the history of Buddhism, any great Chan master or teachers would do that or even say that. So if you hear someone saying that, or you see someone claim he's a teacher, he's a great practitioner, have, you know, attained enlightenment whatsoever experience he has, that he's not bound by the priesthood. He can do whatever his mind takes, even harming, causing harm to others. Then you need to reconsider whether that person would be someone that should practice with, and someone should be your friends or teachers, or maybe just keep a safe distance from that person. And also, precepts is essential, very, very crucial, very, very crucial, perhaps the most crucial reason that Buddhism can still last till today. And in this regard, I have to say the monastics play a very essential role in this. We're just human beings, ordinary people. You know, very, very complex living in today's world. The monastics, monks and nuns, fully ordained monastics, they uphold, they observe, they live their lives in accordance with the precepts. They live by the precepts. So we can protect the integrity, the purity entity there. Someone preside over a sacred, a place center, that keep this pure spirit in it, that everybody can come and practice in that pure, calm place. It is very hard indeed for ordinary people to keep precepts. It's hard, but it's not impossible. But maybe you can do it. So after you die, who observed the precepts? Your son, your grandson, not likely, your friends, who knows who that person is, where that person is. So the Sangha, the monastic, are the community, are the entity that uphold the precepts. As long as this lineage of monastic community sustained, perpetuates Buddhism will remain in the world. It is important, it's very precious. So I urge you to support your monastic sangha, monastic community, and also take care of them. It becomes more and more challenging and difficult for someone to live a monastic life in this world and remain as a monastic, living a pure life, and observe celibacy, more and more challenging. You know, and for future generations, I think it's perhaps more, even more difficult. So the monastic community, Sangha, they observe, they embody the spirit of living a pure life and act and behave, live their life, conduct their life through pure conducts. So they are, so that's why they're still teachers, can teach us precepts. They set up as a, they are the example how people, how all of us can live a pure life, simple life, simplified life. Okay. And then I would like to move on to how precepts contribute, affect, or relevant related to our practice. So precepts is one of the aspects, one of the three aspects of Buddhist practice: precepts, meditation, and wisdom. Sila, samadhi, and prajna. So we talk about prajna last week. Now let's precepts. In early Buddhism, that's the period from Buddha's enlightenment and last till maybe 100 years after his passing. That's the early Buddhism. And then followed by the Nikaya Buddhism, which is also called sectarian Buddhism. That's from the 100 years after the passing of the Buddha till the reign of King Ashoka. That's approximately around 250 years BCE, the Christian era. That's about 250 years time period. So at these two time periods, the Buddha's disciples practice and followed by the teachings of mainly the Nikaya, or in Mahayana tradition, in Sanskrit, is the Agama. And that period of time, the Buddha's and Buddha's disciple, the practice, their approach to the three disciplines, the precepts of meditation and wisdom, they practice in a progressive, sequential approach, meaning that they will, you know, they move on, they engage in the practice in a step-by-step stages, that kind of progressive approach. They will focus on the precepts, studying the precept, practicing the precept, upholding the precept, examining their own conducts, whether it matches in accordance with the precepts. They also engage the, which is called in Sanskrit, upasa, meaning that they will recite, they will get together and recite the precepts, like every 15 days, generally speaking, amongst, they will recite that, the precepts, altogether twice. And also during the rainy season, the retreat, they would do pavarana, meaning like they would get together, reflect on or their own doing, anything they have done, harmful things, or they have say harsh words and cause any harm to others. They will review by themselves, review their wrongdoings in the community, and then repent. You know, it's like cleansing his mind, purifying his mind, and then aspire and give vows that to engage, continue to engage in living a pure life, pure conducts. So that's mainly the practice of precepts. So they will be focusing on engaging that practice mainly. You know, after they become a monastic, the first 5 years or 10 years, simply engage in that practice. And then after that stage, they will learn and practice meditation. And then teachings of wisdom, study and practicing that. So in these traditional Buddhism, earlies and sectarians, Buddhism, even now Theravada traditions, I believe, they also engage in the practice of precept first as the foundation. Before that foundation is fully well established, and then they will move on to the next meditation practice. In Chuan school, what's Chuan approach? What's Chuan's perspective on the practice of precepts related to practice of meditation and wisdom prajna? We perceive that the relationship of these three aspects of practice as a tripod relationship. Not a progressive, you know, step-by-step stages proceedings like that one. And we can see that Chan school actually perceived the precept as an essential and integral part of our practice, meditation practice and wisdom, cultivation of wisdom. In other words, in order to practice meditation well, we cannot dispel or put aside the precepts. You know, one of the questions that's made to me was, can a meditation practitioners just put aside the precepts for a time being? You know, just engage in the practice of meditation. Don't need to worry or take care about the precepts. No, definitely not. Definitely not. If you engage in the meditation practice alone, without also practicing the precepts, you cannot possibly meditating well. It's impossible. It's impossible. All these three, tripod relations, they complement one another. And they cannot be solely engaged in one aspect without the other two. They complement each other, one another, and reinforce, let's say, okay, practice of meditation. We also need to practice the precepts and prajna, wisdom. In order, those two will reinforce, re-strengthen, and infuse more energy, power in your practice of meditation. So let's talk about the five precepts, the very basic one. The five precepts, okay, are five guidelines. Not to kill, meaning kill people, not intentionally killing people. Not to lie, emotionally. Not to lie that you have already attained, you have already awakened, you have already reached a certain stage or certain level of achievements. So you gain fame and fortune, you have a big followers. That's how you reap the fame and power and fortune. Many decades of life. Not to steal for the purpose of, you know, getting the money and causing any harm to others, a big loss, causing a big loss to others. Not to steal, to harm others. I don't think anybody of you would like to rob a bank, right? Not to commit sexual misconduct. And this is this precepts, the purpose of this precepts is to nourish a wholesome family, a stable, healthy, wholesome family relationship. Not to cause any harm to yourself and others, physically, psychologically, mentally. Okay? Just nourish a stable relationship with your partner, a stable companion relationship. And that's good. We need that. Truthful, genuine. True, genuine relationship, loving, caring relationship, stable relationship, a stable partnership. Okay, the last one, not to consume alcohol, intoxicants. Not to consume alcohol, I know this could be very challenging and it could be an issue for some of you because drinking, it seems to be a social, very social thing. A lot of people drinks. The main reason, purpose of upholding this is to not become intoxicated. You know, lose your consciousness, don't know where you are, drunk driving, kill people, or you commit wrongdoings. When you lost your consciousness, you completely don't know what you do, what you said. And not to take intoxicants. The purpose is have clear awareness. Not lose your consciousness, committed some wrongdoing, okay? If you cannot up that precept, that's fine, but try to not take over, way too much alcohol, become drunk or lose your consciousness. Okay, the five precepts, is generally the Buddhists would take, monastic. This is a guideline, a very basic, to be a good person, good human being, to stop doing evil, major harmful acts, and not to cause any harm to others and to ourselves. It's hard, is it? We talk about habitual tendency, the karmic force that has been accumulated, developed over lifetime and lifetime. When you become emotional, you lose your consciousness. You say something that you should not be saying, too harsh, too harmful. You maybe did some foolish things. That all happens. So the observing, upholding five precepts, help us to refrain from committing all these wrongdoings. observing the precepts give rise to an essence, which we call essence of precepts, 戒体. It will infuse energy to us, have that kind of power, and also determination. It is quite, I think it's quite wondrous, you know, when somebody receive and take the pure precepts, take the five precepts, then that person actually embody the essence of precepts, which can have an effect, stop us or alerting us when we were about to do something, to do wrong things. Something just we come up and alert you and stop you right there. Okay. And when one inevitably, knowingly or unknowingly commit a wrongful or evil doing, one's mind is actually contaminated at that moment. And that is against the Buddhist practice. The goal of our practice to purify our mind, purify our conduct, not causing any harms to others and ourselves. So only when our mind purified, then we can be liberated. We can liberate ourselves from defilements, from afflictions, from evil thoughts. We want our wrongs to be less and less. And taking the precepts give us that kind of an energy coming from within. And the energy help us to be more aware, alert, when we are about to do wrong things. But one step further, it also encourages us to save lives, to take care of lives, to care for lives. Okay. And instead of killing people, you save people's lives, you save the lives of sentient beings, they take care of the person when that person is ill. Not to steal, when you have access that you can share with others, that person is need. Yes, cultivate a good wholesome doings, wholesome acts. Okay, so this is the Chan approach. The Chan approach that precept, meditation, and prajna should be practiced simultaneously, not separated, should be all integrated into our life, into our living. Not going stage by stage, progressively, you graduate from this stage, you move on to that stage. And all these three aspects complement and help each other, reciprocal, you know, compensate each other. So how precepts affects our practice or contribute to our practice of meditation? How is that relevant to our meditation practice? As I said, the goal of our practice, meditation, is to be liberate ourselves from defilements and afflictions. So we will not be trapped in the cycle of birth and death. So we will not be trapped in the cycle of constantly eating vexations and submerge in the vexations and then commit the wrongdoings. We want to liberate from that. So definitely by observing, practicing the five precepts, They help to stop evil, wrongdoing. And it is very important. We need to learn Buddha Dharma so we'll be able to distinguish the right from the wrong, embody the right view in our thoughts, speech, and actions, so we can tell what is wrong, what is right, make the right decision, take the right actions, even when we are in a very confused, chaotic, and complicated situation. Not only be able to discern, but have the ability to see things clearly, have a calm mind, not to be disturbed or emotionally afflicted or act in a foolish way. As I said, once we are committed to taking the precept or holding the precepts, then we are embodied with this essence of precepts, which help to stop the wrongdoing, or alerting us, make us aware when we are just about to do the wrong thing. Miraculous, but it is true. Especially for those of you who have already received Bodhisattva's precepts. Bodhisattva precepts are focusing on the thoughts, the mental activities. When you start having evil thoughts, that's considered not upholding, observing the Bodhisattva precepts well. The five precepts is about the physical. Your actions has been manifest, carried out through the body. That's much coarser, a prominent. So the five precepts is, you know, a way of harmonizing, regulate our body, you know, and slowly work on toward the inner part, internally. You know, bodily actions is always the courses among the speech, thoughts, you know, physical actions, verbal, and then thoughts, mental actions. The body is always the coarse one, and easy to catch, easy to stop, easy to be aware. And also, the most serious harmful actions is also conducted, carried out by the body. Take away a person's life. You never get his life back again, right? So start with the five precepts. Just like, you know, doing the meditation, we harmonize our body first. You know, relax our body, sitting with proper posture. Harmonize our body. And then body slowly relax and settle down. Then we can feel and experience our breath. And then further our thoughts, mental activities. Come from the outside, go inner, inside, internally. Same thing with the five precepts. The five precepts works the same as the meditation practice. You know, from the body and then speech, okay? And then the thoughts. And then our practice, without a practice of meditation, one cannot practice the precepts well. Do you agree? In order to practice the precept well, you need to practice meditation. Your practice of meditation helps you to uphold the precepts. When you have, you know, this evil thoughts that you have been entertaining, thinking for a while, and about to carry out your evil thoughts, or when you are in emotion, very afflictive emotion state, at that moment, about to do it, commit that, at that moment, you catch it. You're able to hold that urge, hold off that urge. Maybe all you need is that 3 to 5 seconds. Hold it there, hold it back. Not to follow your emotions, not to go after your those crazy evil thoughts. Just that 5 seconds, then things will be different. Very different. When that happens, you are free. You are free from your habitual tendency. You're free from your karmic force. You are not hostage by your karmic force in that moment, because you didn't follow your afflicted emotions. You are not carried away or controlled by that. In that moment, you are free. So without practicing meditation, you will not be able to observe the precept well. You have no power to deal with your habitual tendency. Without practicing the meditation, you're not cultivating a clear awareness. Be aware of what you are doing, how your actions, how your speech affect the others, how others feels. You don't have that clear awareness of perceiving that. You're completely engulfed and covered by your projected views, biased view, perceptions. And that feeds into more afflicted emotions, evil actions, and creating more bad karmas. And all comes into that storehouse of our eight consciousness that carried from one life to another life. And all these bad karmas is stored in there. You will manifest when conditions allows. You will manifest in your practice, in your meditation practice as objections. You know, a practitioner, she has been looking forward to attain, participate in a retreat, for a good number of years. She had a job, she helped, she's the very important assistant in her sister factory. So it's very busy. So finally, she was able to work out a schedule with her sister. You know, she can leave the factory for 7 days to attend the retreat. Okay, everything, she registered for the retreat, get accepted, and is about to go. The night before, something happened in the factory. A machine broke down, you know, and it's a Friday, and so there's something, they have a big order to deliver, so she can't go. She couldn't attend the retreat. And then here comes the second time. Yes, all right, everything's settled. She was going to attend the 7-day retreat. Guess what? She fell ill. So ill that she couldn't go to the retreat. And the third time, she finally got into the retreat. But this time she got sick in the middle of the retreat. So she has to left in the middle. She didn't, you know, all, in that 5 years, she wanted to attend the retreat. Well, every time, yeah, she's getting closer, but so much trouble, so many obstructions. And all these wrongdoings, eventually, it will ripen and manifest. Happens, you know, in your meditation practice, like, you know, someone, they can engage in the meditation practices so smoothly, you know, it's enough, it's like he's born of a nature, you know, a natural meditator. But some work so hard, but the mind is always restless, agitated, difficult to be in stillness. You know, at the very first place, in the beginning, they always have a problem with postures, sitting like that. And I mean, once he get off the cushion, he has no problem. His back is okay. Then the waist is okay. Nothing wrong, nothing hurts, nothing sore. But sitting on the cushions, for a few minutes, he cannot maintain that position. The back started having some problems, irritating, and then the waist, the lower back, the knees, all come up with problems. He could not sit still. And then he started to adjust the cushion, play around with the cushions, all kinds of cushions, all shape cushions, tried out everything. Always have the problems with the postures, with the cushions, or with his sitting. And then that will be last for quite a period of time. And then finally get over that, sitting on a cushion is like the wrong cushion becomes extended part of the body, okay, settle with it, okay. The mind cannot be rested. Always restless, agitated. So these are all the obstructions can manifest in your meditation practice. We all commit the wrongdoing. So the repentant practice of repentance is very, very important. Auxiliary practice that we should be all engaged in. The repentance practice is to let us to actually face, to see, recognize our wrongdoings and take up the responsibility, to accept what our wrongdoing, to accept the consequences we're ended up with, and take up the responsibilities and commit not doing it again anymore in the future. And also give rise to a determination to stop our wrongdoing. And this is very important. This is like cleaning, remove the clock, like a clock drainage. It's like remove all the debris and rubbish and clog the drains. Have to do that. Because on one end of the drain, the debris and rubbish still come in, hopefully less and less. You need to keep on cleaning it. You need to clean on remove this rubbish from the drain so the waters can flow. Okay, otherwise you'll get clogged up, okay? One day maybe busted, created more damage. And before you get busted, you're suffering from the best smell, you know, backed up water from the sewage, whatever. More difficult and bigger damage will be created that way. So, you know, we all committed wrongdoing as we are human beings, normal, ordinary peoples. Just seeing our wrongdoing, recognize that, accept that, and fix it and take up the responsibility. And then most importantly, give rise, reinitiate that vow, stop the wrongdoing, stop evil thoughts, engage in more wholesome doing. That's exactly the practice of precepts. Stop the evil, cultivate wholesome. Okay. The very last, how to integrate the five precepts into our practice. Oh, before we get there, I also want to say something. You know, in the early Buddhas and even nowadays, there are people, they tend to have this affinity to practice, focusing their practice on the precept, starting the precept, holding, observing the precepts. Somehow, they just neglect, but didn't think much, see the value of also engaging in the meditation practice. So in their whole world, mentality is start the precept, you should be doing this, you should not be doing that, you should not doing that. Once he violates that, he becomes kind of very harsh on himself. This is a very simple thing. How could you commit it again and again? That person becomes very harsh on himself. At the same time, the same attitude applies toward other people. He will be a very strict, very tough, and very, sometimes could be very cruel, harsh on people. You know why? That's exactly why that person needs to practice meditation. Only by practice meditation, you will see how your mind works. What's the relationship with your body and your mind? How you treat your body? How to use your body? Does your body always listen to you? Do your mind control, or you control the mind? And seeing that you are complete, you actually don't have the control over it. And then generate that understanding of yourself as a human being. And generate that compassion toward yourself. Accept who you are. We're far from perfect. Don't be so harsh on yourself. Yes, the principle, the guidelines help. It's like a track. But you also need soil, you need nutrition. Need the love, need the sun, need the water. Not just the soil, not just the field in the box. If that person didn't engage in a meditation practice, he will not really understand himself. He will not really understand how the mind and body works, the thoughts, the emotions. He will not be able to see that he's totally a present. Prisoner of his emotions. Manipulated by his emotions. You have to deal with your emotions. You have to start establish a harmonious relationship, your mind and body, to yourself. Okay, so that's a very important thing. What I said, precepts, meditation, and prajna, knowing what's right and wrong, and apply the teaching so you can truly understand the truth, the ultimate reality. Okay, so three has to practice together at the same time. Okay, not any of these, any one of these three aspects could be dispelled or put aside. Okay, how to incorporate the five precepts into our practice? Just be aware of what we do, what we said, and how we entertain our thoughts. Most importantly, practice the five precepts. Not to kill intentionally to another person, not to lie, you know, to bring your fame, fortune, great followers, not to steal, to cause great harm to others, to bring your self-interest in fortune, not to commit sexual misconduct, to have wholesome, mutually beneficial, stable partnership relationship, okay? Not to get alcohol or intoxicants. Always have a clear awareness, clear consciousness, so you will not commit the wrongdoing simply because you're drunk, you lose your consciousness, drink, but not too much. Okay. And then start with that. The more you practice, the more you realize, the more experience you will have. And the deeper goes with your meditation practice, the deeper your understanding of the Buddha Dharma. And one very important attitude, okay, we will not be able to practice the precept at 100 score in perfection. It is impossible. We are still far from being a saint, a bodhisattva, let alone a Buddha. It takes times, takes continuous efforts engaging the practice. And very often we'll fail. Okay, start with the small things and change the habits, not causing any harm to others and ourselves. The major, the most serious one, you know, not to kill person, definitely. I don't think that would be a problem, an issue. Okay, it takes time, continuous, because it's not simple as you're jotting down a few words, okay? In the back is your habitual tendency. The karmic force is pulling you back. Okay? So recognizing that, accept that, I could not possibly do well overnight or in 1 month or a year. Yes, okay, I may not be so successful. I'll probably fail this time. That's okay. You know, because I'm just an ordinary human being. But I'm committed. I'm committed to practice it. I'll keep on practicing it. Okay? All right? I'm not so successful, but I will keep on doing it. I'll become better and better. Incorporate my practice of meditation. Incorporate my understanding and studying and learning of the Buddha Dharma. Every time you try, every time you engage in the observing, practicing the precepts, you're one step closer to the perfect end, to freedom, to liberation, to the perfection of compassion, ultimate wisdom. Okay, So tonight, my talk would end here. G. Over an hour again. Well, I hope it's not too long for you. Well, it's hard. I decided this topic this morning. I said I'm going to try to limit it to 30 minutes talk. But the more I think I want to present more complete picture to you. Okay. All right. Well, any questions or